You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Here we go, Sherry.
1, 2, 3.
Let Sherry Baby rock your soul. She's gonna help you break the mold.
She's super magic, truth be told.
Ooh, oh, oh, oh. Got lots and lots of musical gold. Spirituality, conviviality, sexuality. Quality time on the air. Quality time on the air.
Hey guys, it's me, Mandy Dolny. Aunt Sherry passed me the mic today. I am a junior from Milliken. I'm the mental health and wellness branch leader of Milliken's Care, and I'm here to talk about real things that need to be discussed with mental health and eating disorders.
Hi, my name is Sandy, and I am a performing artist, writer, person with an eating disorder. I use he/him pronouns, and I have been affiliated with the coalition for a while, so I'm happy to be here to talk to you today.
That's so exciting. I'm so excited to talk to you. Rebecca, do you want to introduce yourself as well?
Yes. Hi, I'm Rebecca. She/hers pronouns. I am a psychotherapist. I work in out of New York City. I have a private practice. So excited to be here. I work a lot with people with eating disorders. So I'm really excited to join in and bring my thoughts and hear your thoughts and learn, and really excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited for this conversation we're about to have. You both are so strong and brave for sharing about eating disorders, and that is something I've been working on this semester with Milliken Care and Sherry, just like being vulnerable and being true to myself. And I'm so excited for the conversations we're gonna have. So I think we should start off with talking about where eating disorders start for people. My personal story is, in second grade, I was almost raped by some boys on the playground, and I didn't realize how much that affected me, because those boys after that weren't really reprimanded, I don't think. They just were able to come back to school and just tell me that I was ugly and no one would ever love me. And second grade Mandy was just like very not able to comprehend that. And then fast forward to sophomore year of high school, I had a very abusive and mentally degrading drill team coach, dance team coach, and she would talk about how I didn't fit the costumes correctly and how I was not the right size for the team, and said things, and specifically said, and your boobs don't fit the costume correctly. And it was a moment of like, why did that just send me to like a weird space? Why did that hurt me so badly? And I sort of remembered, I was like, did that happen in second grade? Did I really get degraded for my body when I was a child who looked no different than any other child? And so I went to my mother and I discussed it, and she told me that that actually had happened, and I was just had to go to therapy and be like, whoa. So I was starting to deal with that sophomore year, and then junior year, I was diagnosed with a pain disorder, amplified pain syndrome. And basically you have to go through desensitization therapy where you like rub your arms and hands and tell yourself that you're not in pain even when you are. And so while that was helpful for the physical pain, mentally that was causing me to, I feel like, go backwards and not be able to truthfully feel like my body is good and right, because I was telling myself my body is wrong and bad. And I am able to recognize now that like that was super traumatic. And I've had other instances throughout my time where I just realized that I don't love my body. And I remember sophomore year, I started just not eating, and I would just not want to eat lunch, like, ever. And then I would just eat dinner. And I was like, It's like, okay, like I'm still eating, but then I started recognizing I was losing a lot of weight. So that wasn't very good. And senior year I was eating, but then I got to college and my roommate was just very manipulative and told me things about my body. And I realized that I didn't want to not eat because eating is good for me. So I would just eat and then I'd puke it all out in the toilet afterwards because I didn't want to not be cool and eat with my friends because in college, like you have to try and find those connections and eating is one of the things you can do with people. But I would always vomit and I was like, this is not healthy. It's not good for me. And I finally, literally this semester, was able to recognize how bad some of my eating disorders have been. And like COVID was obviously hard for everyone. I struggled either not eating or eating too much and then purging it. And this semester I've been able to be really vulnerable and raw with people. And what I just shared is like stuff I would not have shared before, but I had a meeting for Milliken Care, the mental health and wellness branch, where Aunt Sherry was just like, just share, just try. Like, if you're comfortable, just share. And I did. And like, I just like cried afterwards because I was just like so relieved to like finally share about my story. And no, I'm not like completely healed from my eating disorder. Like, I still have days where I'm struggling, but I'm like so content with the fact that I'm able to recognize the fact and I have people on my team actively helping me to just remind me that I'm beautiful and I don't need to make myself look a different way just because I think that's what I need to do. That's my story. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of reasons I am passionate about eating disorders and passionate about that they are, there's different types and it affects people in different ways. Yeah, Sherry.
Yeah, I just want to applaud you right now because you can't, and I'm not, listen to me. You walked in and said how brave they were for coming in and talking about it. And you are wild. That is what I want to say. So thank you because I can't get over you right now.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Unmute me. Carry on. Does anybody else want to respond? Or Mandy, do you want to finish what you were saying?
I think that's all I have to say right now. I'd love to hear about other people's stories and have more discussions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really struck now, Mandy, just by your vulnerability and your courage in sharing. I think something that I think a lot about in eating disorder treatment and psychotherapy in general is just the overwhelming shame and secrecy and isolation that people experience when they're suffering. And, you know, the work that I do is individual work, and yet we know that connection and community and building solidarity with others in our treatment and in our recovery is what is really, really healing. And so you sharing that right now is golden. So thank you for sharing that. I think, you know, I sit with people every day who are struggling with the same things that you're struggling with. And some of the ideas that you brought forward are so universal. Like, you know, when we talk about where eating disorders begin, we're really talking about ways that people are trying to cope and trying to manage an unmanageable situation, right? So early trauma that is unrecognized or unseen by a caring adult or a caring figure. And it's really the the individual's attempt to function and to manage and to deal with a totally overwhelming and unmanageable situation. And so the eating and the body obsession, or obsession is maybe the wrong word, but hyper-focus on that is really a way to deal with the overwhelming feelings that are happening. And so it is both a psychological function, right, of what the eating and the body image hyper-focus does, and also then it is reaffirmed and in the culture that we live in, which upholds a certain body type, upholds thinness, upholds whiteness, upholds control and perfection, and so it is further cemented in that way. So, yeah,
I really appreciate hearing from everyone here. I would say that, I mean, a lot of things in your story, Mandy, it's like parallel mine. I like to joke that there's four main factors in my life that have really fueled my eating disorder, and that's nature, nurture, gender, and theater. Yeah, I genetically, like, my family, there's a lot of history of disordered eating in my family, and that's a nature and nurture thing. I was put on diets as a young child because, you know, from a health perspective, we're told that people, need to be a certain body size to be healthy. And so that was the intention of my family. They weren't being as vain. Whereas theater, there is, you know, I have had, I grew up in the dance world. There are any number of things I've heard over the years that it up to and including teaching me how to use behaviors, that I definitely disavow and hope for better of the dance world for everyone. And then when it comes to my experience, like as a man of trans experience with my eating disorder, there are very specific ways that works, especially in the theater world where there is an idealized body type. Obviously, there are standards of appearance everywhere for every gender, but for theater, it's even more high stakes that men need to be slim and muscular. And in the leading up to my going to treatment, exercise was such a big problem that I was basically given an ultimatum of I can go to residential or I can cool it with being at the gym with my whole free time, because it's something that people don't necessarily realize, because we're told like working out is good for you. It is, to a point. You start to lose like vital like things if you spend all of your time working out. And that is something that people don't necessarily realize. And I appreciate the opportunity to point out like a very like unspoken, underrepresented experience within even talking about eating disorders.
Sandy, you talked about the want to exercise constantly, and I think that's really important to discuss, because when we think about eating disorders, like in society, a lot of times it's just one thing or the other. It's not talking about other ways, but eating disorders is anything that's unhealthy for your body. Yes, college is terrible for body image. I'm in a school that I'm majoring in theater and dance, and I've had professors tell me that I'm too fat, or they, to quote, was, you either need to gain or lose weight because no one wants to cast anyone in the middle, which is really hard for someone who has suffered with eating disorders throughout the years, but also for people that just don't need to hear that. especially when there's no nutritional or good reason for the professor to tell me that. We all get to college and everyone's like, well, the freshman 15, everyone's going to gain 15 pounds. And so it's this thing where like no one wants to gain weight because you don't want to have the freshman 15. People that gain the weight are like, oh, you got the freshman 15. But then a lot of people lose a ton of weight. They lose 15 pounds. And just the fact that we are all so focused on each other's bodies all the time, I feel it's more of a discussion since I got to college. And that's when I was able to really recognize that I had an issue with food and my body. And like Sandy, I'm a dancer. I've danced for a really long time. It was my like form of expression. And I've been pretty lucky that most of my dance professors have not been judgmental about my body. But even them just discussing, well, this looks good on someone's body that looks nothing like mine, I'm like, well, how am I going to execute that if my body looks nothing like that? It's just constantly focusing on each other's bodies that I think is damaging for a lot of people. I think that we look at each other and we either make sure we want that body or we don't want that body, which is also a really toxic thing. We see others and we strive to have this certain look, which is not reasonable or healthy, especially with the fact that everyone's built differently and everyone intakes food differently and does different ways to be physically active. And I think that it's interesting that we all are so different, yet people want just one thing. I feel as if my society that I live in sort of romanticizes eating disorder culture, especially on social media. And a lot of people just are like, oh, I want to be anorexic so I can lose 20 pounds. And romanticizing an eating disorder is never the way to like be, but people, I don't think people are doing it maliciously. I think they just think it's an okay thing to say.
So I've often talked about how there is a continuum within the theater community of people who have clinical level eating disorders, people who have disordered eating habits, and then people who have aspirational, like, attitudes towards eating disorder culture or towards diet culture or towards eating disorders in general. Like, that is the three main categories that I find, besides people who are intuitive eaters, not bothered by diet culture. Like, that's a separate category. But those three levels, I think, exist. And I encountered that in college. I encounter it even harder now in the industry in New York City. Even people off stage, my gosh, I was working on this concert where we were there for like over 12-hour days. And, you know, we ate together and people saw me not eating and they were like so impressed. And it's not something to be impressed about. I was sad because I wanted to eat, but my eating disorder voice or that part of me wouldn't let me eat around theater people because then they'll know I eat, which is, sounds ridiculous. It does. But meanwhile, they're like, oh man, I'm so jealous. Like, you're doing so great. Teach me your secrets to not be hungry. It's like, don't reinforce that.
Yeah. I think something that I say a lot to my clients is, we live in a disordered eating world. To sort of reduce the shame and the pathology around an eating disorder. Like, as Mandy and Sandy have each spoken to, there is entrenched societal and cultural messages that reinforce and uphold forcing one's body to look a certain way. And so we are disordered as a society and as a culture. And you know, I think another thing that both of you pointed to, which I think is really important to talk about, which is the spectrum of eating disorders, right? And really something that I talk a lot to my clients about is, you know, how much space is this taking up in your brain? And how intrusive is this? And when do I really need to get help? And it sounds like in the theater culture that you each are entrenched in, there is a celebration of like habits and of ways of being that might make it really counter or really challenging to say, okay, wait, hold on, something. This is not right. This is negatively impacting my life, my school, my work, my health, my spiritual, my psychological, my emotional life.
Another thing I've noticed at the industry level, both in theater and in film, especially film, but both, is high functioning. Being high functioning with these behaviors is rewarded when people are able to drastically change their body shape, although occasionally it's to gain weight, but usually not. In fact, in theater, if somebody gains weight with age, which is a normal, healthy thing that happens to people, people will say that they've let themselves go, which is what happens when you put value judgments on losing weight, then you put value judgments on gaining weight. But no, but the idea of being, you know, rewarded for that ability to lose weight to an extreme, but then be high functioning enough to perform. That is something that is so normalized. There's like entire articles of people being interviewed, being like, how did you do it? And that, I just don't want that for the kids. No.
Yeah. Romanticizing eating disorders is such a thing, especially in theater. Like you said, people will gain or lose weight for a role, a lot of times losing weight, and then they still are expected to do these crazy routines or these hour and a half long performances, and their body is not healthy currently. And it's kind of scary to think that this is the reality, and I'm such an advocate for change. I cannot fathom having the next generation feel the way that I feel like mine did, especially for performing, because performing is our happy place, right? Like, that's where we want to be, but it's also such a toxic place so many times. And people talk about the perfect Broadway body, but that doesn't exist. There's not a perfect Broadway body. It's whatever body is able to perform and be healthy and you feel good in. And I wish we would recognize that and not hold people to this one standard of, this is what we need to look like to be this performance. Like, it's just toxic. That's the word. It's just toxic.
Something that I think about a lot, which you're touching on, is how eating disorders are both like hyper focused on body and also totally disembodied. And so when you think about performing and you think about like bringing yourself and your voice and your movements, like, that is an embodied, like, full, beautiful expression of creativity and of love. And that requires nutrients. That requires like deep care and love for your body. And like you said, Mandy, it's your happy place. Like, it is a beautiful place that you go to express yourself. And so when there's also a simultaneous culture of like really not listening to your body and really like disrespecting your body, that's cognitively really confusing. And there's dissonance there. And I think the other thing that I really wanted to note is, you know, we've been talking about a lot about culture and a lot about, you know, ways to make your body look a certain or look thin or I think it's also really important to talk about the like psychological function or like what the eating disorder is trying to do for someone's emotional life. And at the core of it, really, it's like someone has had an experience that, or several experiences, right, that require tending to, require healing, require emotional processing, require care, like whether it's a traumatic event or a series of traumatic events or a relationship or whatever it is, like that really need space and need time and need healing and need tools to move through and emotionally process, right? And an eating disorder sort of comes in and is like, I'm going to sort of be the band-aid or be the way that you can survive because of those unmanaged or those overwhelming feelings. And so I think it's really important when I talk about eating disorder recovery to really honor like the way that the body is trying so desperately to protect itself and to like move through a difficult psychological experience. And that healing really comes from both honoring that original coping mechanism that is actually no longer serving you or is actually causing suffering.
So I was about to say also like from a not like divorced from body image, but still related to theater culture, we are a culture of rejection. In addition to like anyone's personal issues, there's also just a widespread amount of rejection and wanting that safety. And I know people who have non-restrictive, non-compensatory eating disorders, meaning binge eating disorder or, you know, like other like compulsive eating habits that have arisen out of that. And that's because there's, and even if it is a restrictive or any other form, it's because they need safety. Mm-hmm. And that is a maladaptive coping mechanism that they've found for that safety in a very unpredictable, scary rejection filled field. That's just what it is.
Yeah. So COVID has affected everyone's bodies, no matter small or large, in mental and physical ways. How do we think that we can actively recover from COVID's way it affected our body? Do we think that COVID was a place that people were able to heal? Or do you think that it was more harmful to a lot of people? And by COVID, I mean quarantine-esque. Did that harm a lot of people? Do you think a lot of people developed or fell back into unhealthy habits? Or do you think people were able to discover comfort? I know that I fell back into bad habits. I was back home, and I'm luckily in a house that's really great, and my parents and my little brother are amazing, but just being back home where every day I would come to my room and puke was very toxic for me, and I had to like change things around in my room just to disconnect from those toxic memories. But I was still able to, I was able to recognize that this was bad for me. And some, I would try and journal about it. That was one thing that a lot of people have suggested, was just journaling. Because taking a food diary and then not talking about it is kind of not great for me. So there was one point in quarantine that I was like, yeah, I am on top of this. And then the next day, like a little thing I feel like triggered me, and I feel like I went 10 steps back. And I know I'm not the only one who feels this way. Like Rebecca, you are a clinical social work therapist. Can you talk a little bit about how COVID quarantine has affected people, in your opinion?
Yeah. I mean, it hasn't been good, I would say. I mean, if you look at the past year, I think we have collectively as a world gone through a trauma, several traumas, right? And so I think everybody's systems are on alert. Everyone's systems are on overdrive. There is a like complete overwhelm of and just an increase of stress in what we're dealing with. We're dealing with isolation. We're dealing with the fear of a pandemic, of death. We're dealing with joblessness, right? We're dealing with just like ongoing social justice movements and police brutality. Like we're it's just heightened, super heightened. So I would say, yeah, many people are seeing an increase in their symptoms, increase in the way that they know how to deal with the stress. And so a lot of that also has, like you said, moving back home, being with family. For you, Mandy, maybe that is a positive or a nourishing environment. For a lot of people, it's not. A lot of people, it's going back to sort of an original place where this eating disorder started. So it can be, you know, add even more triggers for people. That said, I think for anybody, not just someone with an eating disorder, it's like we know that there's increased stress, so we have to just resource ourselves more, right? And so I talk a lot to my clients about, you know, everyone is struggling. So how do we put supports in place to increase your resources, right? And to support you more, because this is real. And yeah.
So for me personally, throughout quarantine, it's varied because there have been times that were rough. I tried 3 weeks back at my parents' house. And it just couldn't work for us, given the fact that we all have various levels of like disordered habits, and it just wasn't going to work. But I still like love them very much. We still talk. That's not the issue. But yeah, I came back to the city, and when I did, there was like that increased isolation, which has been a bit of a gift and a bit of a setback at times. But what's so cool, even when I've had rough stuff, is that I have learned exactly how far I've come in this recovery process. There are some people I saw who are actively like in their eating disorders who are like constantly messaging like or tweeting at like the governor to open up the gyms all day long, every day. And I was just like here vibing, knowing that, yeah, there's a little piece of me that's uncomfortable, but like, I can do this. I don't have to be in a gym right now. There is a global pandemic. Being able to feel my brain, you know, get more adjusted to like other things that aren't my eating disorder has been really refreshing for me.
So would you say that your artistry is a place that is a place to source some of those things? That's like a healthy place. Yeah. So, and Sandy, for you, what is that?
I mean, I've been able to write a lot during quarantine. I've been able to continue like singing, and I've been taking dance classes on Zoom, but not too many. Don't worry about me. but yeah, I've been able to cultivate that without, you know, overtaxing myself. And as much as like I am devastated that all of this is going on, it has been a nice reframe at times.
I think also one positive that has come from this is that treatment is more accessible, right? People can Zoom or FaceTime or whatever their therapist, they can get connected to help in a way that maybe wasn't as accessible before. And so I think that's really changing the field, and that's really increased people's ability to be resourced in this challenging time. And also Sandy, what you're saying about like looking outward, right? Like there is something that's incredibly important and powerful about eating in eating disorder recovery, where there is a, you know, to move towards a sense of collectivity and like we are all in this together, and there's something greater outside of myself that I can be passionate about and connected to, like whether that's Black Lives Matter movement or whether that's like caring for like the global world, that is an important piece of recovery, which is like connecting to something outside of oneself.
Something I think that is going to be important after this pandemic hopefully ends sometime in the near future is recognizing that for theater artists specifically, when we come back, everyone's bodies are going to be differently. And if someone gained or lost weight, it's not that they didn't care about themselves during the pandemic, because everyone's bodies are going to look different when we come back. And Broadway and national tours and regional theaters and even community and school needs to recognize that everyone has, like Rebecca said, been hit by a trauma this year, and things are going to have to be a little different when we come back. We're going to have to be okay with people being not the same person they were when we left in March. And that is something that a lot of the upperclassmen talk about constantly, because we're told that we need to look and be a certain way to go into this industry. But I question, because the industry is not happening right now, how do we know what we need to look like and act like and dance like until we get back into a sense of normalcy in creating art? That's just a question that I constantly have at my school, but also a lot of my friends' programs across the nation. We all are feeling sort of the same things, just we're going out into the industry in the next 4 years or less, and how do we know what's okay, especially after this global pandemic that we're all in together?
Yeah, I think we're at a point of real reckoning, like in our collective consciousness. And so I think there is such an opportunity to dream and to imagine how we want to live differently in all areas of our lives. And that means like doing things and saying things in the way that we want, or in a way that we could have never imagined before. But I do really think that really resonates with me. Like, we are in a moment of deep reckoning with the way things have been.
One of the other things that I think we might have to reframe is, you know, obviously, like, when we use the term industry, it is an industry, but there are theaters aside from Broadway, and I imagine that they're going to be leading the change before Broadway gets there, which means that people have been doing the work, will continue to be doing the work, and will get there far before the most commercial and widespread, you know, part of our industry gets there. Like, I know for a fact that there are definitely people who are more ready to have these conversations and have been having them, and then are going to put out the work excellently when we come back much sooner.
I know that Milliken's Mental Health and Wellness Branch of Care is actively trying to get a licensed nutritionist and just like a program into our theater and dance program to help talk about healthy ways that we can fuel our body if we need to change our body to feel better, how to do that. And we're in the first steps of that process. But I feel like we all had a little fire when we came back to school and recognized that we're all different. We all need to accept that. And I'm hoping that if colleges can start having that change, like my small university if we can even have the change of having an actual healthy way to talk about that, that things will change up and up because of our generations just coming through with new ideas and new wants and realizing that all bodies are Broadway bodies and all bodies are beautiful. And yeah, every time I talk about my eating disorder and just bringing it up with people, I feel even more at peace with myself and not angry with myself. And it's hard, but being vulnerable is really good for me in my growth as a person.
And what a role model you are. I mean, can you believe this little angel baby? College, junior. I mean, you're incredible.
Thanks, Sherry.
Yeah.
I really appreciate everyone that had a conversation today. Rebecca and Sandy, you created a safe space for me, and I really, really, really appreciate that. I learned more than I knew, and I just have more fire in my little booty to make a change in this world. And Sherry, thanks for passing the mic to me. You're amazing.
You're amazing.
Thanks, Broadway Podcast Network and Brittany, for letting all of us do this and talk about things that need to be talked about. I really, really appreciate you all. You all are amazing.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Sandy and Mandy. It was such an honor to be with you and to hear your stories and to include me. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Sandy. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Hey, everybody. It's Sherry Sanders. Thanks for listening to this episode of Cause and Effect. Cause and Effect is part of the Broadway Podcast Network, produced by Dori Berenstein and Alan Seals, edited by Kyle Moore, and music by Courtney Bassett and Andrew Swackhammer of Starbird and the Phoenix. Special thanks to Stephen Farazee. Thank you. And if you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you stream. You should also follow me on Instagram at Rock the Audition. And to learn more, visit bpn.fm/causeandeffect. Peace.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.